All right, Alexander, let's talk about what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, Lithuania, Kaliningrad, and Putin just gave his speech in St. Petersburg on Friday as well. And right after his speech, we have the EU order given to Lithuania. They're basing this on the fifth sanctions package that Lithuania has to shut down rail connections, rail travel between Russia and Kaliningrad, in essence trying to cut off or starve off the Kaliningrad Oblast from Russia proper. The governor of Kaliningrad has come out with a statement, and he has said he's urged the people not to panic, because you saw a lot of panic buying, for example, in Kaliningrad take place due to this railway cutoff. Because a lot of the goods that are being transported are construction and other types of materials. But he also mentioned that Russia already has a plan to send ferries through to Kaliningrad. I don't know how reliable, how this is going to work, or if it's a substitute for the railway. That I don't know. But the governor was urging calm. But Peskov came out with a statement, and he was, wow, what a statement from the Kremlin spokesperson. I mean, he was pretty much saying that this is inching very, very close to, I don't want to say, let's just, he said this was inching very, very close to conflict because of this action.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we'll leave it there. What do you make of all of these things, from Putin's speech to now this
Right,
action?
but
Coincidence?
no, it's not coincidence. Let's first focus on Kaliningrad, because of course this is a serious situation. I have to say, is one of the most extraordinarily dangerous and reckless things that have been done since the start of the Ukrainian conflict. And the first point to make is that it clearly and straightforwardly violates international law. There's a whole succession of treaties going all the way back to the time when the Soviet Union broke up, which basically guarantees rail transit from Russia to Kaliningrad. And, these are formal treaties enacted. There's no conceivable sense that any Article 5 sanctions package can override those treaties. This is not, by the way, trading of goods between Russia and Lithuania. It is transfer of goods from Russia itself to Lithuania. So this violates those treaties. It is contrary to international law. And it is incredibly dangerous because, as you
Did you
absolutely.
say transfer of goods? Sorry, I think you said transfer of goods from Russia to Kaliningrad.
To Kaliningrad,
Correct? Is that what you
I
mean?
meant Russian transfer of
Yeah,
goods
okay.
from
Yeah,
Russia to
okay.
Kaliningrad. In other
Lithuania, I
words,
just wanted to
from one
clarify,
part of
yeah.
Russian territory to another. And of course, all of this is being done in an incredibly petulant way. It's one of the most reckless and dangerous steps that they've taken since the start of this conflict. The Russians are, of course, reacting. It comes closer to an armed conflict between Russia and the Western powers than anything we've ever seen, because they're in effect interfering with Russian internal trade, and yet they've done it. Now, I have no doubt at all that the Russians can handle this. If you send goods by sea, you can actually carry much more in those goods than you would by rail. It might be more expensive. There's lots of things you might have to do. You might have to divert shipping from one part of Russia to another, but you can do it. I mean, it can be done, it can be sorted, as the governor of Kaliningrad said. But it increases the sense, I think, on the part of people in Kaliningrad that they're under siege. And of course, it makes the Russians think more harder about the fact that Kaliningrad might at some point have to be defended by military means. And of course, if things get even worse, if we start to see NATO warships trying to interfere or harass those Russian ships transporting goods to Kaliningrad, well, then we're in an incredibly dangerous situation indeed. So it is an extraordinary thing to do. Now, why are they doing it? And I can't help but think, yes, it is to some extent connected with Putin and his speech at Spief, which we'll come to in a moment. But I can't help but think also that what's driving this is blind rage, in the sense that everything that they set out to do back in February, to crash the Russian economy, to cause a political crisis in Russia, to cause a banking crisis there, to set off hyperinflation, all of that has failed. They had Putin talking at enormous length about that over the course of his speech at SPIEF. I mean, much of this was centred about the failure of the Western sanctions package. And so they responded to those words of Putin with this incredibly angry, petulant gesture of trying to blockade Kaliningrad in that sort of way, which seems to me to set up the situation for a crisis. So we have a Berlin crisis. You remember during the Cold War that West Berlin was cut off from the rest of Berlin, and, you know, the Western powers had to try and keep Berlin supplied, even though it was surrounded by East Germany and by the Soviet army, and it became a very dangerous flashpoint during the first half of the Cold War. We're looking at something very similar, except, of course, this time it's the Western powers doing it to a Russian region at a time of heightened international tension. And what is astonishing about it is that the Western media are barely covering the story at all.
Right. Okay. So here's what the governor of, just to clarify, the governor of Kaliningrad said. He said, urging citizens not to resort to panic buying. Alkhanov, who's the governor, said two vessels were already ferrying goods between Kaliningrad and St. Petersburg, and seven more would be in service by the end of the year. Quote, our ferries will handle all the cargo, the governor said on Saturday. A couple of thoughts. If warships, or if any ships, dare harass or attack Russian boats ferrying goods to Kaliningrad, then I think we're definitely in World War III.
Yeah, absolutely.
No doubt about it. Yeah. That's point. Yeah, no doubt about that. I think that this move, when I look at a map, now I start to say to myself, this move made by Lithuania and by the EU and the United States, because Lithuania is not doing this on their own, that's for sure. This move makes me believe that Russia will now go all the way in Ukraine to the Polish border and to the Belarus border, because the more NATO decides to poke at Russia and push at Russia, I think Russia's going to say, you know what? Why is NATO thinking that they can expand eastwards? Well, we can expand westwards. And I think that Russia feels like with the EU economy, economies collapsing, that they can now put some pressure on that western, well, eastern, western, depending on which side you look at it, on that border with Europe. And it's not that far a distance from the western end of Ukraine to Kaliningrad. All the Russians would have to do is just, if they wanted to, just threaten to bite off a little sliver of territory from Lithuania, and they are connected to Kaliningrad. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying that it's not that far a distance. And so I think that Russians will say, you know what, two can play at that game. So we're going to pressure you all the way onto your border. And that's going to be a terrible situation for Lithuania. And the final point I want to make is, given the what seems to be a change in tone from the collective West, where 2 weeks ago we had a lot of statements from NATO, from the Biden White House, where they were talking about Ukraine having to find some sort of deal with Russia and get to some sort of ceasefire and accept that they're losing territory. In the past 3 days, you've had a kind of change of tone where it's been, we are in it for the long term. We're going to fight Russia until the very end. Our weapons will push Russia out of the Donbass. That's what Stoltenberg said. The Washington Post said that the Biden White House is committed long term to Ukraine, and they've been planning for this all the way till the bitter end, and they're going to prevent Russia from achieving its maximalist goals. And you've seen a lot of rhetoric. Mark Rutte, Ursula von der Leyen also said that they're going to fight Russia to the very last Ukrainians. They pretty much said it. You've had a change in direction where they've been talking about fighting Russia for the long term, and they're not backing down no matter what. Do you think that this move is connected to this change in rhetoric where the collective West is saying, you know what, let's ramp up the rhetoric. We know we've lost. Let's ramp up the rhetoric and signal to the Russians that we're going to fight till the very end. Let's try to find some pressure points and gain some leverage. Shell Donetsk, try to starve off Kaliningrad. I heard reports that they're trying to hit oil rigs right outside of Crimea. All these little different pressure points, which really don't change the trajectory of the war, but maybe the West thinks giving Russia some pain along with some ramped up rhetoric, we can get them to the negotiating table and they'll have to give us something in return when they negotiate a peace with Ukraine.
I that's exactly what they're trying to do. I mean, I think the attacks on the oil rigs, by the way, have been confirmed. And, of course, we've had the shelling of Donetsk, and now we've had this move in Kaliningrad. So all of this is absolutely correct. This is exactly what they're trying to do. And, of course, what we see is the seesaw in Western discussions, particularly in Washington. I mean, we can take it as read, by the way, that the bureaucracies in Brussels, the European and NATO bureaucracies, are going to want to take the hardest line possible. And by the way, this move over Kaliningrad shows how dangerous those two bureaucracies have become and how out of control they are, that they're instigating a potential crisis in a place like Kaliningrad in this kind of fashion. And they clearly, as you rightly say, have the support of the neocons. So you see, you have the people, the rational people, let's not call them, you know, the wise people, the rational people in the Treasury Department, the Commerce Department, the Federal Reserve Board in the United States, some people within the German business community, a growing number of people in Italy. They're all saying, look, this has got to stop. We've got to find a way to end this war as soon as possible. And that, of course, is they were making some ground. They were winning over some ground a few days ago, about a week ago. But now what that has done is that it's provoked the hardliners to try to escalate the situation. And what they're doing in reverse is that then, you know, we see the shelling of Donetsk, we see the attack on the Russian oil installations of the Black Sea, we see these acts with respect to Kaliningrad, none of which will change, as you absolutely rightly say, the trajectory of the war. But what they are clearly intended to do is that they're intended to prevent, to sabotage any attempt to try to get some kind of negotiations between the Ukrainians and the Russians underway. And to all of those, I would add these latest moves by Ukraine to ban circulation in Ukraine of Russian music made post-1991, Russian books written post-1991, to ban the teaching of Russian in Nikolaev, all petulant, angry, profoundly wrong things, all of which are clearly again intended to goad the Russians and to provoke them and also to make negotiations impossible. Now, of course, the trouble is that they will, of course, prevent negotiations happening. I think the Russians, I was again looking at what Putin had to say, and it was very interesting that in his speech, he had nothing to say about negotiations at all. I mean, this is, and you know, he is the least hardline person in Russia, in the Russian leadership, or so it has long seemed to me. He's always been the force for restraint. He had nothing to say about negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, future negotiations between Russia and Ukraine. I think the Russians have given up on negotiations. I think that they've come to the conclusion that Ukraine is negotiation incapable. It can't agree anything with Russia. The Western powers are never going to get together and come to any kind of agreement. And I think that the Russians have decided that they will have to go on until they decide that they're going to stop. So they're not going to be sidetracked by, you know, attacks, pinpricks, which is what these attacks on these oil installations are. Putin made it absolutely clear during the Q&A that they're not going to be diverted from their military operations by the shelling of Donetsk. They're not going to try and attack the Ukrainian forces opposite Donetsk head on. They realise that that is what the West and the Ukrainians want them to do, to divert troops from the areas where the Russians are advancing to an area where the Ukrainians are very deeply fortified and where they can withstand Russian attacks more effectively. He said, we're going to continue with what we're doing. We're going to attack these Ukrainian troops from the rear. We're not going to be diverted from our course. We're going to see this thing through, but we are going to see it through to its conclusion. And we alone will decide what that conclusion is. We're not going to wait and hope that there's going to be negotiations with the Ukrainians or with the Western powers, because we've seen that that leads nowhere. So that's, I think, what the Russians have decided. So coming back to your earlier point about that this Kaliningrad event is going to harden Russian determination to go all the way to Lviv, I think that is exactly what it is going to do.
Okay, final question. Strategically, this doesn't really make much sense because, you know, okay, you stop the railway travel from Russia to Kaliningrad, but the Russians are going to find the workaround via the ferry. So if your goal was to punish the people of Kaliningrad or to isolate Kaliningrad, I mean, there must have been people in the European Union and the U.S. who said, well, just cutting off the rail transport doesn't really isolate Kaliningrad because the Russians are going to move it by sea. So obviously your goal there is not to win some sort of strategic objective to isolate Kaliningrad, because if that is your point, then you're going to have to start sinking Russian ferry boats if that is indeed your objective. I don't think they're going to do that. So obviously this was meant to poke at Russia, and Russia's going to find a workaround, which is the ferry boats, like they did in Crimea, when water was denied Crimea, or when they couldn't connect Crimea to Russia proper, they created the Kerch Strait Bridge. So the Russians are very good at finding workarounds. And so for Kaliningrad, they're going to find a workaround. So my question to you becomes, every time Russia is forced to find a workaround in these types of geopolitical scenarios, eventually, with time, say over 5 years, over 8 years, the Russians eventually say, you know what? This workaround lasted for as long as it lasted. Now it's time to just solve this problem once and for all. And so my question becomes, they're going to have a workaround. They'll have the ferries. Maybe those ferries will run for 1 year, maybe for 5 years, maybe for 10 years. Eventually, has Lithuania signed its signed up to its own demise, because eventually, in the long term, Russia may one day say, now it's time to end with the workaround and just connect Russia proper to Kaliningrad.
Well, okay, I'm going to make a simple observation about Lithuania. I mean, I think Lithuania is living dangerously. I mean, it took steps a few months ago with respect to Taiwan, which have enraged China. And the Chinese have retaliated economically against Lithuania, and that's apparently caused severe economic problems in Lithuania. Now, Lithuania has taken this extraordinary step, which, as I said, violates treaties that were made at a time when Lithuania was granted its independence by Russia. And by the way, it was granted its independence by Russia. I can remember Boris Yeltsin at that time, back in August 1991, pressing for Ukraine, for Lithuania and the Baltic states to be granted independence, and it was he who rammed it through as Russian president. There were people still in Russia who were opposing it then, but Yeltsin forced it through. So that was the reality at that time. Now, Lithuania is living very, very dangerously. It is gambling on the support of the United States. The trouble is, as we've discussed many times, the United States is a global superpower. It has interests all over the world. It has interests in the Pacific. It has interests in the Middle East. It has interests which are more important to it in Europe than Lithuania is. Ultimately, would the United States, in a crisis between Lithuania and Russia, put its own existence in jeopardy, because that's what conflict with Russia would mean, in order to defend Lithuania, if Lithuania goes on provoking the Russians in the way that it is? I am going to say straightforwardly, I don't think so. I think there will come a point where even the US is going to say to itself, Lithuania is a problem, it's a burden, it's not an asset. And given the geography, especially with Belarus now aligning itself ever more increasingly towards Russia, and with Russia becoming militarily more powerful, and with Russia consolidating its alliance with China. I mean, one of the most important speeches at the St. Petersburg conference was the fact that was the one given by Xi Jinping, not because he said anything that was new, but because the very fact of him coming, it was a virtual speech, but the very fact that he actually delivered a speech like that at SPIEF signaled the extent to which China backs Russia at this present time. So with all of this going on, and given its geography, it does seem to me that if Lithuania does continue on this course, it is living on borrowed time. It is undefendable by conventional war. I mean, the reality is the United States would struggle to defend it, even if it was able to get Finland and Sweden into NATO. The Russian missile forces dominate the Baltic Sea. Western warships would be in great peril if they tried to operate there. So, and of course, the Russian military is far more heavily concentrated and will always be in any situation than the NATO militaries are. So I think what Lithuania needs to do, what the Lithuanian leaders need to do, is they need to take a step back, think very carefully about what their geography is, and change their policies completely. Now, I understand that the present Lithuanian government is coming under some criticism within Lithuania itself. These policies are not entirely unopposed within Lithuania. But for the moment, that government continues to do what it is doing, and it is putting Lithuania's future at risk.
Yeah, you're angering the Russians, you've angered the Chinese. This is not a policy.
It's not wise.
This is not a foreign
it's
policy.
Not wise. Yeah. It's not a foreign policy. As I said, it's putting you at ever greater risk. I've said this many times. Not just Lithuania, all three of the Baltic states need to think very hard about their position. Russia is on their doorstep. It is their neighbour. And it is clearly reconstituting itself as a superpower. Now, you know, we haven't discussed Putin's speech, and perhaps this isn't the time, but he was talking a great deal about the kind of things that Russia is doing, about how it was able to withstand the sanctions pressure, that its depth of its resources, its economic organisation, its all-encompassing, globe-spanning alliances or effective alliances with all sorts of other countries. You can steadily see Russia rebuilding, and rebuilding itself, in effect, as an economic and military superpower. It is the superpower on your doorstep. The United States is far away. You need to have, if you're a country like Lithuania, you need to have good relations with the superpower on your doorstep. Because ultimately, you have to take it into more account than the superpower that is far away. If the Lithuanians go on in the way that they're doing, what they will discover is that they have an angry bear knocking on their door, and the United States might be distracted by other things. and might not be willing or able to come to their rescue in the way that they hope.
Yeah. I had one more comment that I wanted to make to you before we end the video, but I forgot.
As one does. I just wanted to say, whilst you're speaking about this, let me actually discuss Putin's speech briefly, because I found it incredibly measured, very objective, very analytical, avoiding rhetorical flourishes, avoiding emotion, actually saying surprisingly little about the war itself, though he seemed very confident about the way that it was going, but charting very confidently and very clearly Russia's economic future. And the point is that the Russians are increasingly feeling themselves strong. They have absorbed the entire attack that the West threw at them. As we're speaking, as we're making this program, the ruble is trading internationally at 55 rubles to the dollar. It's getting stronger all the time. And he has plans about, you know, reorganizing Russia's scientific and technological position, about reorganizing the Russian education system, about rerouting Russia's oil and gas exports, which were oriented towards the West. It was a legacy left over from the Soviet times, because the Soviet Union built the pipelines westward. But of course, now Russia's rebuilding those pipelines eastward. And besides, as I said, he's looking to build up the technological side, the industrial side of Russia. And he's very confident that he can do it, because the hard work that he and his government have done over, you know, the last 10, 20 years means that they now have a financial system in Russia that can support these things and can finance these things without having to depend on the West. So he's confidently charting a way forward. And he had some very, very interesting things to say about the economic policies of the West, the way the West has over-depended, over-relied upon money printing for the last 10 years, and how it has essentially undermined the internal economic fabric of Western societies, especially of the United States, by the steps that it has taken. And so it was a very interesting speech, and you can see again the gradual re-engineering and reconstitution of the Russian superpower. And I think we need to start using that word to talk about Russia again. It's always been a great power. It ceased for a time to be a superpower. It is now within sight of becoming a superpower once more.
Well, that was my question, actually, I remembered. Lithuania has angered Russia and China, and you're saying that Russia is on the way to becoming a superpower. But we've gotten a lot of reports which show how committed China is to Russia and Russia is to China. For example, the Chinese have said they're going to now provide airline parts to the Russians. We've got reports that Russia is now the number one oil exporter to China as well. Can you not say that today, at this present moment, Russia with China is a kind of superpower? I'm not saying they have a formal alliance or they're connected formally in any way, but obviously these two countries working together in the way that we're seeing is a superpower. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's not just a superpower. I mean, you remember that awful expression that was said about the United States, that it was a hyperpower. Well, this is a hyperpower on steroids, because you have the enormous natural resources and very real technological resources of the Russians, combined with the technological resources and the enormous manufacturing resources of the Chinese. It'll sweep the board. I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, I have to say, this is what we've achieved in the West. You can see some people now saying this. I mean, that was Kissinger's point. I mean, you know, you're creating this Eurasian colossus And that's what we're seeing. And of course, China has had its weak points. Russia has had its weak points. Of course, they need spare parts for their aircraft. You know, they might have to import some chips. China has always been by far their biggest supplier of chips, as it turns out. Something I didn't know, by the way. I'd assumed that the Russians imported chips from the West, the way people talked about it. But it's not actually the case. Most of the chips Russia imports have already been from China, and they will continue to be supplied. Obviously, many of them are Western designed. The Americans may try to prevent the Chinese exporting Western designed chips. But anybody who thinks that the Chinese and the Russians can't design chips is a fool. The Chinese have enormous manufacturing capacities in chip production, and you name anything. And if these two economies integrate like that, well, frankly, it's game over. I would say that in terms of the Chinese coming to these agreements with the Russians, any illusions the West, anyone in the West might have, that the sanctions against Russia can work, must now be dead, with China supporting Russia economically. I mean, there is no conceivable way now that the sanctions can succeed. Same is true of India, of course. But, of course, with China, even more so.
All right, we will leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com. Everybody, join us on the Locals community and the Duran shop. 10% off when you use the code GOODDAY. Take care.